This is the Breaker.News podcast for December 17th, 2017. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues and institutions. Help us stop the secrecy and unravel the spin. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this episode, regular features such as the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines from around the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. The big deal feature this week, we celebrate Festivus with a feature interview with Mario Canseco of Insights West as we look back at the airing of grievances and the feats of strength from 2017. And The Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to someone who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or did BC Premier John Horgan miss a golden opportunity to change the way BC decides how to build megaprojects? He chose to continue to build the Site C Dam, now estimated at $10.7 billion. It was a damned-if-you-do, damned-if-you-don't decision, a legacy of former BC Liberal Premier Christy Clark and her obsession to put it beyond the point of no return. Horgan, to his credit, referred the project to the BC Utilities Commission, where it should have gone in the first place. We learned a little bit more about the costs and the risks of the project, but we still don't have full transparency. BC Hydro would rather function like a private company than to show us all of its spending and all of its contracting information. There are complaints with the Information and Privacy Commissioner, which is intervening. Horgan could have and should have declared that any future megaproject costing billions of dollars should be subject to a province-wide referendum. Because that money doesn't belong to politicians. It belongs to you. The buck must start, and the buck must stop, with citizens. In this season of Festivus, air your grievances. Write your MLA, write Horgan. Tell them that you want a say. You deserve a say in whether megaprojects get the green light. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim, where we look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. Doug Smith in the Los Angeles Times reports, after California's most destructive wildfire season, a debate over where to rebuild homes. With the frequency and cost of catastrophic wildfires climbing in California, the idea of compensating property owners to not rebuild or using economic pressure to discourage them from building in the first place is gaining support among those searching for ways to cut wildfire losses. More than 10,000 homes were leveled and more than 40 people were killed. Researchers warn that 2017 is a sign of what's to come, as the effects of a warming climate and unchecked wildlands development converge. The question of rebuilding is emotionally and politically fraught. Proximity to nature, beautiful views, and remoteness draw people to the wildlands where builders have obtained permits to place houses in areas with high risk to fire. Some of the neighborhoods that burned this year had experienced fire before, when there was less development. Houses rebuilt there will soon be at risk again of a fire cycle that experts say is shortening from decades to only years. In the South China Morning Post, Kate Whitehead reports Rohingya child refugees in Bangladesh need our help now, says Save the Children CEO. Of the 600,000 Rohingyas who have fled from Myanmar into Bangladesh and are living in makeshift huts, more than half are children. The most vulnerable children are those who have been orphaned. Many have seen their family members killed in front of them. Alone in the camp, they risk being snatched by child traffickers operating in the shelters. The vastness of the sprawling camp, which is some distance from a main road, means that anyone can enter. In addition to handing out basic humanitarian supplies and food, and setting up emergency health units and safe spaces for youngsters, Save the Children is also trying to identify unaccompanied children and reunite them with relatives in the camp. They have told of fleeing terrible atrocities. And in the Mexico Daily News, Pemex executive is Odebrecht casualty. A wide-ranging corruption scandal involving Brazilian construction conglomerate Odebrecht has claimed its first casualty from within the state oil company, Pemex. the Secretariat of Public Administration dismissed company executive Marco Antonio Sierra Martinez from his position, disqualified him from holding any public position for 10 years, and imposed a fine of $6.2 million for his role in alleged corruption relating to a construction contract at the Pemex refinery in Hidalgo. The second-tier executive is accused of overpaying Mexican affiliate Odebrecht by the same amount he was fined. Odebrecht is one of 22 subsidiaries of the Brazilian firm in Mexico, and the federal government announced that it had been banned from bidding for public contracts for the next 4 years. That is Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling, where we look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Georgia Strait, two takes on Site C. Charlie Smith reports that two organizations fighting the $10.7 billion dam want an independent review of the government's accounting. The Peace Valley Landowner Association and the Peace Valley Environment Association have asked Auditor General Carol Bellringer to launch an urgent examination. They want Bellringer to determine if the NDP government had no alternative but to incur an immediate $3 billion to $4 billion charge on either BC Hydro ratepayers or BC taxpayers if it canceled the dam. Meanwhile, Martin Brown reports that, to his great credit, Premier John Horgan did not choose to make his announcement on a Friday, as he might have, or only after he had completed his year-end media interviews. He did not try to minimize the media fallout, as most governments do in taking out the trash on unpopular decisions. Instead, Horgan announced his decision on a Monday to invite maximum accountability. Site C aside, as the year comes to a close, the NDP supporters should have much more reason to raise a glass in support of the government than to rip its hide in public or private. Mike Carter in the Seattle Times reports that he scammed almost $150 million. Now he's found a way to escape federal prison. The Federal Bureau of Prisons has declined to offer any details of Darren Berg's escape except to say that he left the 128-bed federal prison farm next to the federal penitentiary in Atwater, California on December 6th. The maximum security Atwater prison holds 1,200 male inmates considered among the most dangerous in the federal prison system. The Bureau won't say why Berg was in a prison farm, given the extent of his crimes and the length of his sentence, the amount of restitution he owes, and his relatively young age. Berg has served roughly 7 years of an 18-year prison sentence imposed in 2012 by U.S. District Judge Richard Jones after pleading guilty to wire fraud, bankruptcy fraud, and money laundering. Berg got credit for time served. Berg turned 55 and owes roughly $140 million in restitution. And finally, in the Victoria Times columnist, Amy Smart reports, privacy watchdog probes Victoria's ties to Brexit vote. BC's privacy watchdog has launched an investigation into whether a small Victoria tech company credited with playing a pivotal role in the Brexit vote broke privacy laws. The Office of the Information and Privacy Commissioner is reviewing whether Aggregate IQ Data Services is complying with the province's private sector privacy legislation, known as the Personal Information Protection Act. In March, Britain's Telegraph newspaper revealed what it said was the key role played by Aggregate IQ in the June 2016 referendum to take the United Kingdom out of the European Union. Campaign spending documents show the Leave side funneled about $5.8 million through the company, and the Telegraph described it as a secretive consultancy firm that helped win the social media battle. That's Cascadia Calling on this week's Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time for the big deal on the Breaker.News podcast, the special Salute to Festivus edition. We're at Insights West in Yale Town in Vancouver with Mario Canseco, Vice President of Public Affairs with Insights West, a Vancouver-based market research company with clients across the private and public sector. Insights West keeps its finger on the pulse of British Columbia. Festivus is coming December 23rd. It's a time to reflect on 2017 and what grievances were aired in 2017. So what better place to come than the office of a pollster? Welcome to the Breaker.News podcast, Mario.
It's my pleasure, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is the first year for Donald Trump. inaugurated earlier this year. Free trade negotiations, renegotiations with Canada have been on the headlines. Also the softwood lumber tariffs across the world. Xi Jinping and China got more powerful, and Kim Jong-un misbehaved more this year. Here in Canada, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau hit the midterm blues. We saw the last 6 months of Premier Christy Clark and the first 6 months of Premier John Horgan. And is this the last calendar year of Mayor Gregor Robertson in Vancouver? What, for you here at Insights West, were some of the major grievances that were aired by British Columbians who responded to your polls in 2017?
Well, here in BC, the main one continues to be housing. We saw it really as a big issue before the last municipal election, before the last federal election, before the last BC election. It continues to be the number one issue facing BC, particularly for millennials and those who live in the Lower Mainland. We really haven't seen a lot of movement from the new government on this file. I mean, there's been a couple of discussions, but nothing really out of the ordinary when it comes to solving the housing crisis. And to me, that's going to be the biggest issue for the government moving into the next year. They've done some things that made some of their base happy. They've done some things that made some of their base unhappy. But this one continues to be the biggest issue facing BC. And they haven't really done a lot on it, and they really need to move.
What about on transportation and transit? Very costly, mega projects are on the docket for years to come. We don't know the cost. They don't want to tell us the costs. No. Here in downtown Vancouver, of course, bike lanes are and other congestion items are really causing people a lot of anger. What about the transportation file? What are people telling you?
Well, there's a couple of issues there. The first one would be the fact that the bike lanes have suddenly lost their luster. There's not a lot of people who are excited about them anymore. Some of those young residents who use their bikes are now having families, having to pay mortgages. It gets conceivably difficult to be on a bike when you have a baby. It's more complex than that. So the aging base of Mission Vancouver, so to speak, is now moving into different areas of their lives, and they're not necessarily happy with what's there as far as the infrastructure. When it comes to the bigger transportation issues, there's a lot of support in Surrey for LRT, but we don't really know what's going to happen there. It's still a little bit wobbly. And we're slowly coming to the realization that it's going to cost us more to drive. We've started to ask about congestion pricing, whether you should charge for specific bridges, and the numbers continue to climb. I think people are starting to realize that whatever they do, if they don't get onto the bus or the SkyTrain, driving is going to be more expensive, and they're not happy about it, but they're starting to figure out what their options would be.
And province-wide, we had, during the transition from the BC Liberals to the NDP, the biggest natural disaster in British Columbia history, the wildfires. And then we end the year with another big provincial story, the decision by John Horgan and the NDP to continue to build Site C. What have people told you about those issues?
Well, what's interesting about the Site C decision is it's something that is definitely going to alienate the Green voters who maybe supported the NDP in some ridings where they didn't think that the Greens had a chance. So that strategic voting definitely plays a role here. If you live in a riding where you were going to vote Green and then you voted for the NDP because of your concerns about Site C, then you're more likely to be disappointed with the decision that they took. I think what they were going for in a way was to not be seen as a party that says no to specific projects. I think they're going to come out hard against Kinder Morgan to try to appease to the environmental base of the NDP and to a lesser extent to the Greens who are dissatisfied. And ultimately, I think with the wildfires, it was really rough because, you know, we did have a few photo ops with the outgoing premier, with the incoming premier. It's really tough to tell what is going to happen there because they both, in my view, tried to use it to their own edge. It worked well for one of them, but not the other.
This year, what was the most famous airing a grievance here in British Columbia that really comes to mind, the one that showed up in the polls and was top of your mind?
I think it has to be housing because it's something where we had a situation where the governments kept blaming each other. And with the city of Vancouver, this is definitely crucial because they kept saying, you know, we can't really deal with Harper because he's not really helping us out. We can't deal with Christy Clark. She's not helping us out. Now you have a federal prime minister who is supposedly friendly to you. You have an NDP premier who should be friendly to you, and we still haven't seen a lot of movement on that. And this is definitely changing the way in which people look at vision. And I think it definitely played a role in the airing of grievances during the municipal by-election. To see Vision Vancouver finished where it did, and to see it lose so badly, certainly suggests that there's a lot of people out there who are looking to air that grievance, and they did it in that by-election. Maybe not as many because of the low voter turnout, but definitely sent a message.
And what was the biggest feat of strength in 2017 here in British Columbia? Who had that moment, the feat of strength that really sticks out?
Well, because it's a feat of strength, it definitely means that it's something that happens fairly quickly and you don't need to sustain it. So to me, it's Andrew Weaver supporting the NDP. It happened fairly quickly. They decided, they talked about it. There might be some discussions about things that haven't made them happy, but it's a moment in time when he definitely decided that he was going to support the NDP. Now, there might be people who are disappointed because of the decisions with Site C and some other things that they've done, but as a moment, that was the feat of strength for me. The idea of somebody who has only three seats essentially forming the next government.
And what about the airing of grievance by Linda Higgins, the famous one, during the election campaign as TV cameras were rolling in a North Vancouver grocery store, telling Christy Clark directly what she thought of her and how she wouldn't vote for her?
That was an extraordinary moment in the campaign. I think if there were two moments that really defined that campaign, one of them would be Linda Higgins. The other one would be the way John Horgan reacted to the discussions that he was always angry. I mean, he always replied by saying, I'm angry because the government isn't working, because there's so many things that are wrong in this province, and this is why I'm angry. So I think Linda, in a way, galvanized the way a lot of people felt in the Lower Mainland about the Liberal Party. And we saw it in the final stages of the campaign, people really looking at the BC Liberal Party as a group of friends, as an old boys club, and essentially saying, you know, maybe it's just time for change. And ultimately, I think that is the reason why the NDP did as well as it did in the Lower Mainland. And people were starting to get tired of what they were hearing from Victoria.
Thank you very much, Mario Canseco with Insights West, for being on the special edition of the Breaker.News podcast in time for Festivus. And may you and your family and everyone here at Insights West have a happy Festivus.
Happy Festivus to everybody else.
Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. To celebrate Festivus, a virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes to Daryl Plekis and Linda Higgins. When they aired their grievances in 2017, they helped change British Columbia. Sunshine Coast citizen Higgins did it in public at a North Vancouver grocery store where Christy Clark was campaigning for re-election. In a story first broken by TheBreaker.News, Abbotsford MLA Plekis did it behind closed doors at a Penticton meeting room. His demand that Clark's leadership be reviewed after the party lost power led to Clark's retirement from politics. Plekis eventually became Speaker of the Legislature, putting the BC Liberals' hunger for power out of reach for now. Like Higgins, Plekis endured many insults from the BC Liberals. But both Higgins and Plekis were applauded by many, many more people for their courage to speak up. Linda Higgins and Daryl Plekis, they reminded us in 2017 that one person can make a difference. Those airings of grievances were true feats of strength. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar too. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Well, that's it for the Breaker.News special Festivus edition for December 17th, 2017. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Send your feedback, send your story ideas to me. The email address is bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark TheBreaker.News. You can also find us at TheBreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter, and you can visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You also can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. Be like Quan Lee of Vancouver, who is at the $50 Muckraker category. Thank you very much, Quan. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com /TheBreakerNews. Until next week, happy Festivus.
Happy Festivus!
Happy Festivus!
Hey! Happy Festivus, everyone!
It's a Festivus miracle!